Well, I am so thrilled today to be sitting across from one of our dear friends. We have been with Jason Vio for years, it seems. Jason, welcome back to WRTI and to Crossover. You were here from the very beginning when you broke out and you kind of just surprised everybody. Here he was, a guitarist of such tremendous talent. And things have happened very, very quickly for you, and that's why you're here today. Tell us a little bit more. You're teaching at Curtis these days as well.
That's the biggest recent news is for me. It's the new appointment at Curtis. It's the first new department there in 22 years. And David Sterriman and I have co-founded the guitar department starting this fall. So we're now actually already in our second semester, and I was here in Philly for audition day. So we auditioned for our second school year.
Well, now, of course, years ago, you didn't have guitar departments. Now all of the big conservatories and a lot of the major schools have guitar departments. When you have a repertoire for your students, is it classical? Do you teach all forms of guitar playing? And I'm not talking necessarily about jazz or pop, but I am talking about classical in a sense.
Right. Well, it's pretty much classical music and new music that's modern, new concert music. David Sterriman, we have a particular focus on new music because of his just vast expertise and experience with that, with Bridge Records. And then just for me, I bring something a little bit different to the table. We have a lot of similarities, I think, in our career, but we also have a lot of things that are uniquely us, and they complement each other. And so just with the recordings I've made on Azika Records over the years, I like a lot of diversity.
Well, that's what I remember. And I remember when you, as I said, you kind of broke out of the mold when you first came to WRTI, and we were talking about your album with the music of Pat Metheny, and that was kind of already a little bit different from Bach.
That was new.
We were in another field there.
That was something that happened very naturally, and it was an outgrowth of just stuff I used to do in college, just making arrangements all the time of tunes.
Well, guitarists have to do that, don't they? I mean, in general.
I think, it's something that I've always embraced, being able to take something from another, genre. Because I don't really listen to music in terms of genre. I'm more interested in individual artists and the music that they create. So it didn't seem strange or provocative to me to do a recording entirely of music by Pat Metheny, because he's one of my favorite musicians. But that was a big step.
It was a big departure, because if you're playing Bach, sonatas or so on the guitar.
Latin American repertoire.
Yeah, and then Latin American repertoire as well. Speaking of which, I guess the reason you're here, I adore you as an artist, but I adore Piazzolla. And you just made a wonderful album of the music of Astor Piazzolla. Now, this is not new. Piazzolla has become very, very famous.
Oh, sure.
And everyone loves his stuff, as we say. But tell us a little bit about how this came about.
Well, the record is titled very simply Piazzolla. And it has three works on it: the Four Seasons of Buenos Aires, the original, like the double concerto originally written for guitar and bandoneon by Piazzolla. And also the History of the Tango, which is a duo for guitar and flute that I've played for years. I've played it with cellists, violinists,
which is really flutists. Kind of a classical work in a sense.
Oh, yeah. It's more of a concert work, right?
Yes.
Like a lot of his pieces were.
But he was a jazz guy, wasn't he?
Very much so. I think there's a very strong element of that, because he had a band, basically. It wasn't like a chamber group with his, if you've seen like the films of his quintet. It was very much like a jazz ensemble where, players would take solos over the chord changes and that kind of thing. So it functioned not very similar to like a jazz quintet.
But he was exploring, of course, the Nuevo Tango, which was the new sound, which is very controversial still, believe it or not, in Buenos Aires. I think he really, his works, his classical works, and we say that in quotes, are classical. aren't they?
Oh, yeah. He was often quoted as saying, "I want my music, the tango, as represented through my music, is not meant to be danced to. It's meant to be listened to." He very much liked this idea of people in concert halls sitting and focusing entirely on the musical content of what he was presenting to listeners.
So what happens to you when you start playing the Piazzolla? Do you go into another zone?
Yeah, I just try to go where they're going if I can figure that out. You know, if I just can feel what they're feel what they're feeling and just try to speak their language, you know, whether it's Bach or Spanish composers or Pat Metheny or Piazzolla. And Piazzolla's music, that kind of music it's a very unique from any other kind of Latin American or South American music. You know, it's to give one example, like Brazilian music has a softer edge. It's mm-hmm. even in the way that the Brazilian people talk.
Yes.
It's got like very soft,
you're right.
rounded consonants and a lot of vowels and
and
Argentinian, like, you know, it's got a harder edge and more consonant and more like driving rhythmically.
Well, he was really depicting at the time, I guess he was inspired by the barrio, by actually the slums of Argentina.
Right.
I mean, he said he was kind of making a commentary, I think, musically as well.
Even in the history of the tango, the first movement is called Bordel 1900.
That's right.
And so the history of the tango is like this four tango, you know, chronology of in the second movement's Cafe 1930.
Well, it moves out of the slums into the high society, right?
Yeah. And then the third movement, Nightclub 1960. And so, it's just that's a piece I've been playing for years. But I met Julian Lebro, the bandoneon player, when he came to Cleveland and was performing at this jazz club, Nighttown, in Cleveland, with his Hot Club of Detroit. It was fronted by Evan Perry, this great guitar player.
Well, we had them on, I think, on Crossover some years back, and we were so taken by them as well. It was just a discovery for us.
Oh, they're just such
a fabulous
band. And my producer was there with me. We were hanging out there, and it was one of our favorite hangs, Nighttown mm-hmm. in Cleveland. And we just see this guy, I mean, they're all great players, but I'd never heard somebody play accordion like, Herbie Hancock, this kind of modern jazz kind of thing, and like very much, speaking my language in terms of the jazz records that I've loved and listened to for years. And so we bought him a bunch of drinks after the show, and we were just hanging out and talking. And I said, because in the back of my mind, I'd always been playing the history of the tango, but I'd never gotten the chance to play the double concerto. So I asked Julian, I said, "Hey, do you ever play bandoneon?" I said, "I'm looking for somebody to play this double concerto with." And he said, "Well," he's like, "I actually started," he had just started, fooling around with one and figuring out how to play it, because it's very different than an accordion.
Of course, for the audience, it's just buttons. It's like a concert, the squeeze boxes.
Right.
That's really what it is.
Yeah, it's just a more rustic version of the accordion, which of course has keys. In addition
to just the buttons.
This is just buttons.
Yes.
It's just a button box, basically. So it was. So he had practiced it. I'd arranged maybe a year or two later, I had managed to pull together a concert in Cleveland where we would play this, and he's a great arranger too. He arranges things like in minutes. He arranged it for it's for string orchestra and the two soloists, so he arranged it for string quartet and double bass. And we played that in Cleveland, and then we made a demo just to show. I wanted to show my management, like, this is we could really do this. And then Alan Bice, the producer for Zika, the one I went to hear them, Hot Club of Detroit, with, he found he had managed to pull together a situation in which He found a chamber orchestra, these amazing players called A Far Cry. They're from Boston.
Yeah.
And he had put together a situation where we would play two concerts, one of them at Isabella Seward Gardner Museum, and then another location. And then we would have rehearsals before those two concerts, and then we'd have 2 days of recording. It would all be done in a week. So we did the four seasons. Julian arranged the four seasons of Buenos Aires. Then we played our double concerto. And then Julian and I, later on in Cleveland, that spring, we recorded the history of the tango.
The burning question is, are you going to go to Buenos Aires and play?
Well, that would be, of course, great.
I mean, really, you know, it's such an experience. And I look at you, and you are so versatile. And again, for those who are listening, Jason is a classical musician, plays a classical guitar, and here you are in a whole other genre. And it is another genre. It's classical in a sense, mm-hmm. but the style is certainly very, very different.
Right.
Isn't it?
It is. And I've always played a lot of, you know, different South American music. And for me, it's not merely because I think with a lot of times it's kind of a way for classical musicians, like Piazzolla gives them kind of license to let their hair down a little bit.
He makes it legitimate.
Yeah. It's like he's made it okay a little bit in some ways. But for me, it's actually what I'm attracted to Piazzolla's like the improvisatory aspect of it. The fact that I look at him as like this kind of, almost this jazz kind of figure, and when you watch the live videos, it's just amazing how they function like a jazz quintet or an ensemble,
which is different from what, say, for the audience again.
Well, just different from like a concert quintet. You know, if he was playing, you know, the way that group works together, it's a reactive way of playing, the way a jazz group does, even in a way that's more overt than a string quartet. There's, you know, he could, you know, he, I mean, I'm sure a lot of the arrangements, of course, they're worked out and everything, but they can stretch and bend a little, you know, more with each performance. And I think it just has this sound to it that's so, elastic, and it's like very much the arrangement itself and the pieces itself are a changing, ever-evolving thing.
Well,
with a group,
I think,
like that.
Yeah, that's the difference between jazz and classical. I mean, you have a jazz song, and that thing can be played every which way.
Right.
With classical, it is written on the page.
The written notes, yeah.
Now, as a classical musician, this has always been, I would say, in a sense, a problem, because classical musicians are very adept, but we are not taught to improvise.
Right.
It's different. Bach improvised, and a lot of the organists improvise, but we don't learn that way. You learn the written page.
That's right. And I mean, I learned how to improvise through just on the side when I was going to school at the Cleveland Institute of Music.
And you didn't tell anybody about it, right?
Well, I mean, at first I didn't even realize I was doing that. Uh-huh. I didn't even know what, you know, it's like you don't even know what you're doing. You just know that it's music and it's fun. And, you know, I was writing things and not even realizing I was writing, you know, and arranging and not even thinking that, oh, I'm arranging this, or, you know, pulling things off of records and making like little impromptu arrangements of songs. And
well, you wanted
could have been
more,
anything.
I think, too, kind of maybe that you had more to say. Let's put it that way.
It was just a side that just of my musical, I guess, I don't know, personality or interest that I didn't feel like I should suppress. And actually the guy who taught me how to read a chord chart or a lead sheet
in my
freshman year at CIM was Evan Price, formerly of Turtle Island String Quartet.
Yes.
He's won a couple Grammys with them, and he's just an amazing improviser and great violinist. And so, I mean, he has a lot to do with that story, you know, too, because he'd plop these lead sheets in front of me, and he wanted me to sort of comp in a Django Reinhardt kind of style, and I didn't know what he was talking about, because all I listened to was, you know, modern jazz from the 50s, 60s, and after. So, so that was a great education for me on the side that you can't get at Cleveland Institute. You can't get it at a conservatory. No.
And especially, I think the guitar is the instrument that is very versatile.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, it's not considered an orchestral instrument except as a soloist.
As a soloist, yeah. Which, I mean, now, I mean, thank, I mean, that was one of the, another thing I wanted to,
Rodrigo.
I felt, I you know, knew years ago that I would love to play that, the Rodrigo Concerto de Aranjuez, you know, 1,000 times if I had the opportunity to do it. And so I'm playing it, you know, with any, I'm playing concertos with 8 to 10 orchestras a year now, and that's just a dream come true for me. I mean, I always, because in high school I used to listen to John Williams and
Julian
Bream.
He's still playing it, I think.
Yeah, oh, sure, yeah.
Well,
oh, he's still playing it great. I mean, he's a constant inspiration.
Tell us a little. He is amazing. I mean, he's up there.
Oh, boy. I mean, John Williams, just the example that he sets of for clarity and you know, the prowess on the instrument is really always inspiring to me. Because for me, it's like, I think I come from it the other way. Like, I always hear the picture, you know, like the sound picture in my head. And for me, it's like I have to practice to get the clarity of it, like, really sharp and clear.
Now, for instance, clarity in terms of the technique.
Yeah, like, just to get
the
voice. Well, just, you know, I know how I want it to sound before I can play it well.
Which is good.
And I have to, you know, the hours of practice are all just to get it to somewhere close to that.
How many times have you thrown the guitar against the wall, right?
So that's, he seems to be like one of those guys that just, like, he can just play it immediately. You know, it's, I know that that's probably not true, that some of my other big heroes like Manuel Barueco and David Russell,
fabulous.
they're just such
marvelous.
A high level of playing. But I always was like also just way into the sound of the guitar as heard or experienced through other, you know, mediums too. Like I said, like Pat Metheny is just a huge influence, and Eddie Van Halen, for quite frankly. I mean,
well, this is what I was going to say, because these artists that you've mentioned are definitely classical artists, and they are playing the classical guitar pretty much, I guess, all the time.
Sure,
yes?
Bream, Williams, Barueco, yes. Russell. Yeah.
Okay, and there is a Spanish style of guitar playing as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
Is it, you're still playing the strings, the frets, the way you, for instance.
Well, sure. Well, so for example, like, you know, there's a piece. Just that little snippet there, that's Rumores de la Caleta.
Okay,
by Isaac Albéniz.
Yes, Albéniz.
Originally a piano piece, but right in that, just that 1 minute, you know, you get... That's a typically Spanish thing. The Malagueñas, the dance form, and you hear the meter, the strong metric, you know, thing.
Now, the flamenco as well has that.
These kind of things that remind us of flamenco dance. Because
but flamenco, is that improvised, a lot of that?
Real flamenco. Yeah. This is kind of Albéniz's impression.
And he put it on paper.
And those are exact notes. And so I try to, like, play it with a certain amount of, sort of muster up the Spanish feel.
Je ne sais quoi.
But it's hard to describe, like, what that is. I guess some people call it, like, duende or something.
But flamenco is, as in the dancing, very much.
That's more akin to jazz, to me, because they have a form. So it's not a song form like a jazz musician would improvise over. It's a dance form, and the guitarist is improvising over. They know the form. There's a certain numerical, you know, metric kind of thing to it. There is science, of course, but every time they play it, they can play it differently, and the dancers dance differently to it, which is
again like jazz. So you put a different hat on, you know, with each thing that you play, in a sense.
Sure.
Now, you have a new hat to put on because Valentine's Day is coming along. You did something was that on the spur of the moment? You were killing some time or something?
That's how all these arrangements that I sort of come about, like the Metheny, all sort of just from my enjoyment only, really, initially. I just sort of, I'm with my guitar and killing time. I was with Elgin Symphony playing the Rodrigo Concerto de Aranjuez.
And this is what you did while you were waiting on the
I was waiting to rehearse, and I thought, well, this is Valentine's Day is coming up, and
I have an hour and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just, I had already finished kind of warming up on the Rodrigo Concerto, so I could, you know, for example, like, this is My Funny Valentine, and so I guess I'll give it a shot here.
It's a gift, Jason.
Just stuff like when you think of something and it's like, you know,
it's there.
You flesh out a little bit of the chords and make sure that, you know, and then you add color notes to them, those, you know things that sound really nice.
Well, sure, added six and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's fun. I never get tired of doing
stuff. Well, especially,
like that.
I mean, I hate to say this, but the guitar is that kind of an instrument.
Great,
I mean,
it's just for jazz.
It beckons to you to do stuff.
Well, I've said this in hundreds of interviews. Like, in a lot of ways, the guitar for me, and I'm biased, obviously, because I love this instrument so much, but it's the best of both of the worlds of piano. Like, if you think of piano as a polyphonic instrument,
right?
An instrument that's capable of playing many voices at the same lines at the same time, right? And then you have, of course, the string world and, you know, the string family and the winds and all that kind of thing that
but
can
that's
play
a
with
single,
vibrato.
Yeah, but that's also a single line.
Generally, I mean, of course, the violin and cello, they're capable of playing double stops and that kind of thing. But what you get is the main thing that's really great about that is their singing capability. But the guitar, it's always one of the things I feel like more classical guitarists could do is play with vibrato. I mean, the guitar actually.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
You know, it has this ability to sing if you apply. You know, it's an application of vibrato, the same way.
You have the Asian instruments, the Indian instruments, what the sitar and so on. Don't they do a lot of that?
Oh,
kind
sure.
Of vibrato,
part of the way that they express this kind of thing of the human voice.
Yes,
and
that's
and
what
I think
it is.
By
yeah.
extension, the human condition. You know,
and also so. I think the note is sort of in a kind of a round. It goes on and on and on in semitones, like, you know,
sure,
what
yeah.
happens. Yeah.
And so while the guitar can't, you know, if you play a line like that, like, you know, know, something
you have
like,
to have a vibrato.
You do, but the note doesn't sustain.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't
otherwise
apply
it'll
vibrato,
just be,
you know, it's you get something more. There's a little bit of the sustain.
Well, it's hard, yeah, but it's and it's all well. The harp is this kind of
same
kind of
thing,
same
right?
Kind of thing.
But the guitar, if
you
by,
can make
you can
it,
make
you
it,
can vibrate.
Right.
It's very
and
much,
and it's a polyphonic instrument, so you can play melody and accompaniment, or you can play counterpoint with Bach fugues and everything.
It's a, you never use vibrato in do you in classical? Pretty much.
Oh,
I mean,
I
to
use
this
it
degree.
All the time.
You do?
Oh, totally. I mean, like
say in a Bach.
Like the Spanish stuff a lot.
Oh, well, yes.
Oh, even in Bach.
Bach?
Oh, yeah.
Say,
so, sure.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, like a saraband especially. Like
A sustained note.
You know. Maybe not right there, but see.
Oh, sure.
Something like an appoggiatura.
I was going to say,
where you play the non-chordal, where you lean on that note. It's, I can't help myself.
You can't, going to say, as I watch you, you have to do it because it's not a straight sound.
No.
You've got to give it that.
Even
humor.
Violinists, when they play unaccompanied, they're always playing, they play with vibrato.
With all string, I think so.
I mean, and if it did become sort of a rule or, you know, within academia that you couldn't do it, I'd still do it anyway.
we didn't hear that. Okay. Okay, Jason, it's so wonderful to have you here and to delight us with this little bit of, you know, off the top of your head and your great new album. What's next? Are you planning another album?
Yeah, a couple, actually. We got half of one in the can. It's going to be kind of like a short pieces, like fast encore type pieces, you know, more of a lighter CD. And then I'd like to do something, you know, I mean, I'm getting a lot of emails about Bach, you know, from fans about, you know, well, you're the one said volume one, so that implies that there's a volume two. So I would like to, you know, to do a second volume, and I'd like to, you know, I'd like to record the Britten Nocturnal. I mean, that's a piece I'm playing in concert this season and the following season, and I'd like to play it a lot. It's just one of the great original works for classical guitar of all time, in my opinion, and it's just this wonderful
of
theme of variations on John Dowland's "Come Heavy Sleep" by Benjamin Britten, written in 1964.
Yes, yes.
It's
17-minute lute music
masterpiece. It's one of the great modern works, and I'd like to record, you know, that, and I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that we have, all kinds of projects that we have.
Now, will you be performing anywhere live within the next year or so? Do you have some concerts?
I do. I know
scheduled?
We have a date with Philadelphia Chamber Music Society where I'll be playing. It's a solo recital, and I know that that's going to be for the 2012 and 13 season. So it's I just can't remember off the top of my head what that date is, but
I'm going to remember it because I'm going to talk to you again.
Okay. Yeah, we should get, you know, we should get together again
wonderful,
around
Jason.
That time.
And for our audience, Jason has kind of tucked this into his very busy schedule. He happened to be carrying his guitar, and aren't we lucky? So once again, thank you so much. It's been a joy, and until the next time.
Thanks, Jill.
Thanks.